The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And this evening I'm going to continue my ongoing series looking at emotions and mindfulness practice. And last week I began with, last week was a discussion about loving kindness. And loving kindness being a form of taking it as a kind of emotion. And I thought I would continue a little bit on that area, that field of love or loving kindness, and talk for a little while. And then I'd be curious to take questions and hear what questions or concerns you have around this topic. Sometimes I find it interesting or useful to divide up emotions into two categories. Those emotions that involve some form of contraction and those that involve some form of expansion. And so, for example, if I suddenly get greedy for something, I kind of tighten up a little bit. Or if my eyesight gets very focused on the thing that I want, there's a kind of general kind of narrowing that goes on. Or if I get irritated or angry or aversive, there also can be a contractive movement that goes on. If I feel genuinely generous, it often comes with a feeling of being expansive, an expansive feeling, an opening feeling. And in fact, the more open we feel, the more likely we are to be generous or to be kind or to be loving. So there's those emotions that involve contraction and those that involve more expansion or openness. And if we then expand in relationship to a contracting emotion, it dissolves the contraction. If we contract around an expanding emotion, we destroy the expansive emotion. So if I get really tense out of my desire for something, then if I enter into that world of desire, feel it, be very present for it, and then open up, relax, soften with it, then it's hard to keep engaged or caught or attached or preoccupied by that desire. If I feel some expansive generosity or love, and then I get afraid of that, those ideas, those feelings, then, and I kind of contract or resist, then it tends to push away or cancel out the feelings of generosity that might be there, or cover it over, or diminish it in some way. But if I feel an expansive emotion, and I soften into it, it tends to get stronger. If I feel a contractive emotion, and I contract further, it tends to reinforce it. So this is a very simple idea. Maybe it's it's kind of generalization kind of idea, but there's two kind of movements or directions in emotions is useful because it explains that if you soften around whatever's going on, if you be present for it and allow yourself to kind of relax, and relaxing is kind of a form of expanding around it, being spacious around it, being allowing, soft, it tends to counter the momentum of contractive emotions. If we resist the expansive emotions, we tend to diminish those. But if we soften around the expansive emotions, they tend to get stronger and more stable and more interesting. So in meditation practice, meditation is kind of a relaxing, is meant to be, to some degree, to be relaxing, to be kind of more expansive. The mind, the heart, the body tends to feel more open, more relaxed, more expansive, more spacious. And that doesn't come with neutrality. You don't end up being kind of a neutral blob as a result. But it tends to create a big template or big kind of opening door for a whole series of emotions which can belong to this more expansive way of being in the world. And some of the things that people we value the most people, I think as a society at least, we value the most, like generosity and kindness and friendliness and love, compassion, all belong to that category that of expansive emotions. So for example, if we encounter suffering, someone, a friend of ours is suffering in some way, it can be painful to be with that. Today I talked to a friend of mine who was just rehospitalized after surgery because of complications, and he was in a lot of pain. And so, you know, it was present, and it was painful kind of to feel his pain. But then to, so how do I relate to that pain? How do I relate to that discomfort around being around my friend? Now, if I contract around it because I'm afraid of it or resist it or whatever, then one thing happens. But if I enter into the world of that discomfort and allow myself to feel it fully, soften with it, relax into it, not fight it, not resist it, then it tends to give birth or allow for some beautiful things to happen. And one of the most beautiful is compassion. And it's counterintuitive sometimes, because the intuitive thing is we should resist or turn away from suffering, or we should shut down or do something. And in fact, sometimes what we think is compassion is not really compassion. Sometimes we think we're trying to help someone who's suffering, and sometimes it's not a compassionate movement, but rather it comes out of fear or resistance or aversion to the pain. We want to fix it so we don't feel uncomfortable. If we soften and soften and soften, just allow to be present, then some very different relationship can happen to the discomfort. And it might be, for example, that the compassion, pure compassion, can be there. And compassion is also motivating. Compassion also then wants to do something about it, about the suffering, maybe help in some way. But it's not trying to resist it or make it different. And again, it can be counterintuitive, this very idea that we should be open and soften to that which is difficult. So meditation practice, I think, is a training in learning how to open up, learning how to be expansive, learning how to relax, or learning how to soften with whatever is present. So if there's whatever, whether it's beautiful or whether it's difficult, we bring presence to it, and that presence then kind of softens around it. And so it kind of can open up. So I think of, when we look at love, love is, you know, maybe we can, if we consider love as an emotion, there are many different kinds of love. And I think it's interesting to distinguish between things that we label as love and are contracting, and things we call love that are expanding. So if there's a lot of strong desire connected to the love, I want that thing, I want that person, I have to be with that person, then it's not an expansive movement, rather narrowing down and tightening down. So, for example, I fell in love with a girl when I was 14, I think. Happened once. And my friends and I, we met her on the street one day, and we followed her home to where the street, near where she lived. So I knew what street she lived on, but I didn't know where she lived because I didn't follow her all the way. And I knew her first name. So, of course, since the desire was strong and I wanted to see her again, we went through the phone book. And I went from the front, and my friend went from the back, and we called everyone who lived in that street, asking for that person, until we found her. And her last name was something like M, started with M or something, so it took a while to get to the middle of the phone book. So, now was that an expansive form of love, or, you know, I was pretty focused. So what does love come with? You know, does it come with feeling more expansive or contractive? Or sometimes, oddly enough, it can do both at the same time. So what does love come with? What does love want? Is a very interesting question. What does love want? You say you love something or love someone, and then you say, oh, that's nice, but what does that love want? What's the desire that's with that love? What's the motivation that goes with it? And a lot of emotions, plenty of emotions, are connected to motivations, to something we want. So in terms of love, what's the desire there? So if the desires, you know, sometimes we say we love someone, we want to possess them, or we want to be recognized by them, we want something from that person. Other times there's love for someone, and we don't want anything from them. Rather, what love seems to want is love wants to appreciate, love wants to care, love wants to reach out, wants to radiate onto the person. So it's not so much what we get from the person, but rather what is expressed in us. And it's wonderful to be able to meet someone and express our feelings, or to meet them, see them, and it's not about getting something in return. So when there's love, what is it we want? So as I said a little bit last week, in Buddhism there's a variety of different kinds of love. The one that we tend to champion the most, maybe two, is one is compassion and the other is loving kindness. And I sometimes prefer to use the expression goodwill to loving kindness because goodwill implies a goodness. There's goodness in that will, in that willing. And to will implies an intention. And our will, we don't use the word will very much in English, but will is a very, I think, significant way of talking about intentionality or motivation. To have a strong will can be a beautiful thing, though sometimes we criticize people for being strong-willed. But I think to have a strong will is actually a very useful thing to do, because if we have a healthy desire, there can be momentum behind it to actually accomplish it. So goodwill I think of it as kind of comes from a kind of strength, whereas oftentimes people think of kindness coming from maybe a weakness. So a strong sense, coming from a strong sense of goodness, where the will wants the good for the other person. So that's the expression of kindness. So if it's only kindness without will, then we're not going to act on it. If there's only will without kindness, without goodness, then I'm afraid that we might kind of manipulate people or kind of roll over them or, you know, kind of do something. But if the goodness is there together with the will, then perhaps we can do something helpful in the world, help our friends or do something. In Buddhism, we add a third thing to... There's the emotion, like there's love. There's the motivation that goes with it. And then there's the wisdom that's tied to it as well. And that wisdom is often connected to skillful means. The skillfulness, the street smarts we have. So it's not just a matter of having love or having goodwill towards someone, loving kindness towards someone, but it's having the wise understanding about how is it that I can act on that? How is it useful? What are the different ways to maneuver, to enter into that world in a way that is not offensive, because sometimes kindness can be offensive, that it's not interfering with people, that doesn't get us in trouble because we get involved in people and they expect something we don't want. So how do we enter into the world skillfully? How do we understand what's happening there in the relationship to know what the different expressions that are appropriate in different times? There are often with the world of love, it can be very confusing for people, because what one person calls, you know, loving kindness, someone else thinks it's romantic interest, and so then, you know, it's a little bit confusing. Or these expansive feelings of love can be very seductive. When I was in, I spent a number of years at Tassajara, which was a co-ed Zen monastery. And it's very interesting to spend a year or so in a monastery where there's a lot of meditation practice, a lot of spiritual practice, and to have your heart become very open and relaxed and spacious, expansive, and feel this very relaxed, open. All this kind of feeling of goodwill or love and is there, and it's very easy to see other people in a very generous, loving kind of way. And it's very easy for them sometimes to see you in a generous, loving way. Well, it's just a ripe recipe for people falling in love with each other. And it's not uncommon for people to fall in love at Tassajara with each other. And then they leave Tassajara And they say, what was I thinking? Or to fall in love with someone and for it to be inappropriate. I had to, when I was, first year I was there, Tassajara, I fell in love with a woman, and she, after a while, she came up to me, Gil, this is inappropriate. You know, because I was a little bit kind of, I don't know, maybe following her too much. And so she left, she told me, she was very willful, very kind, very with a lot of goodwill, a lot of kindness. She said, Gil, forget it. And so how to rest in feelings of goodwill, kindness, loving kindness, love, it's kind of generous spirit of the heart, where we really, it's a little bit hard to define what love is, I think. Someone defined it very nicely last week for us, defined it in terms of loving kindness, I thought. But I think a love often comes, I hope it comes with an appreciation of someone, if it's love for a person, a sense of delight in reflecting or thinking about the person, a sense of kind of maybe softening, expansiveness that occurs in relationship to that person, wanting the other person to be happy and well. Those are some of the kind of more positive aspects of loving someone. And then there's the other things that sometimes get confused for love or connected to love by some people, where there's wanting something, desiring something from the person. So it's all great. But what happens if we allow ourselves to be very present for our feelings, for the, whatever the loving feelings might be, no matter how romantic it might be or not romantic, how much desire there's part of them, how little desire there's part of them, just kind of be present for it and soften, relax with them. And my experience is this, the being relaxed, softening presence, really be present for it, tends, it's kind of like removing the chaff from the wheat. It's kind of like some of the things that are kind of unskillful, some of the movements which are not so healthy to have in relationship to love, tend over time to fall away. And so I find it really great to have a practice like meditation, where I can be present for these things as they arise, or have it, the movement of mindfulness be something I use in daily life, where I can really recognize the feelings that I have, be present for them, and then have a softening or relaxing with them. And I have got, managed to stay out of trouble many times because of doing that. Realizing, oh, you know, so my motivations, my desires shift and change depending on how I connect and be present for these feelings. And it's a beautiful thing to do because that way, that approach, because it means that nothing has to be denied. We don't say, oh, that's bad, I shouldn't feel that way. I feel this way towards somebody and I shouldn't feel that way. I'm not supposed to feel that way. Who's to say you're not supposed to? But it's safe, feel it, it's okay. But then be present for yourself in a way where you don't act on it immediately, but see what can soften and relax. And chances are, if you soften and relax enough, feel expansive, then any aspect of that feeling which is unhealthy or inappropriate will probably fall away. Because the unskillful approaches involve some form of contraction, of tightening up. And also, as we get more expansive and relax into it, there's a beautiful way where there's less and less desire or wish that's self-centered. Because to be self-centered around what's selfish about our feelings is a form of contraction. And so as we kind of enter into the world of expansion or relaxation or opening or whatever way you want to call it, one of the things that softens or lets go of or releases is selfishness. And so as selfishness relaxes, then we're not so likely to act selfishly. And good high percentage of how we act unskillfully or unhealthfully in the world can be traced back to some form of selfishness. So what does love look like for you when you're not selfish? When you don't want anything in connection to that feeling. When the love is there, without any self-reference to what you want for yourself. What's it like? What's it like then? And the suggestion I have is that you probably discover that it's quite beautiful. It's not an easy thing to come to, because sometimes it can be very difficult to let go of the self-centeredness. The self holds on to itself quite tenaciously and is afraid to let go. But to let go, to soften. So those are my thoughts. And so now this has been 2 weeks I've talked about, or talked around love a little bit. So now I'm curious to hear what your concerns are, your questions, your wisdom around this topic that you'd like to bring up.
Seems like, so Christians talk a lot about forgiveness. Seems like a lot of what you're saying is this softening to the hardness is similar to that instruction. Is that a little bit of what you're saying? Does that resonate with that?
It does resonate. And I wasn't thinking, as I was giving this talk, I wasn't thinking about forgiveness at all. But earlier in the day, when I was thinking about giving this talk, I wondered about talking about forgiveness. And I thought, forgiveness. Well, forgiveness is not an emotion. It's more an action, more like that. So I thought, oh, maybe I'll not talk about it. But now you brought it up, which is quite nice. I like that. And so I think that forgiveness is necessary when there's resentment, when there's anger. So that's a contraction. And so forgiveness is a beautiful word. Has to do with giving, to give, that generosity. And so I think it is a kind of movement towards being more expansive or relaxed or softened. And I think it's a very, very important practice to do. Very useful.
It occurred to me that for those who have children and you're not in an aversive relationship or a point in time with that child or children, that the love that one can express to one's offspring is much cleaner and much more giving and much more supporting for that individuals than you might find in other types of relationships. And also the emotion that you might find for a grandparent, where there isn't that buffer of the parent, that whatever, can also express a really nice, giving, loving, open relationship.
Yes, it can. What's interesting, like especially with parents and children, is that that definitely can be there, but they can swing so quickly.
Only after they get out of adolescence.
Oh. I was on the phone with this friend of mine this afternoon who was in the hospital. He was clearly distressed and in pain and kind of seemingly quite exhausted from his many, many days of dealing with his pain. He finally took morphine for it. And so I was talking on the phone, and my six-year-old son really wanted my attention. And he's discovered knots, making knots, and he wanted somehow me to put my finger inside the slip knot. And I kind of, I was talking to my friend, it was kind of intense. So I said, not now. And I put my finger over my lips, not now. And he wouldn't respond. So I tried to kind of show angry faces. And finally, I think he got it. Or he got up and walked away. But then when I finished the phone call, I went over and found him. And I said, I need to tell you that when I am on the phone and I tell you silently, with my hand, that leave me alone, I'm only going to do that if there's a really important need. And this need was my friend is in the hospital and he was in pain and he really needed me. So you should know that in the future I'll only do it if I really need it. So that's my response to, it was my attempt to try to, express my care and my love for him at the same time as explaining why there was some strong limits needed to be set.
I don't think discipline gets in the way of love or love in the way of discipline. It doesn't necessarily get in the way.
It's right back there, please.
Thank you. I'd like to know when love is a contraction emotion, and if that exists really. So is that really love, or is it an obsession?
So when is love the contraction emotion, contractive emotion?
Yes.
And when is love not that? Or is that the question? Or when? Or is it in fact ever contractive?
Exactly. The last one.
I think that's for you to answer. But I wonder if you listen to all those popular love songs, they use the word love a lot. Is it expansive or contractive love?
I have a feeling that love is free, and it doesn't go with contraction, in my vocabulary at least.
Good. So this is something for each person to find out for themselves. I don't want to define it. But what I wanted to do was to give these, because people call so many different things love. And people use the word so easily. And sometimes the word, because it's so easily used, is also used to justify things that shouldn't be justified. So by giving the movements of contraction value and contraction and expansion as an evaluation, it might begin to kind of tease apart and more carefully the different aspects of what some people will call love. And if you don't call anything that's contractive love, only expansiveness that has no selfish desire, which is great. That's really wonderful.
Well, thank you.
Yes.
So I'm curious how you contrast the softening to tolerance.
To tolerance. Say why you're asking the question.
Well, a lot of times we use this term tolerance, I think, especially in this country, but as a way of somewhat distancing ourselves from something, allowing it to be there but still in opposition to it. And I get the impression that that's not really what you're saying either. It's just, this is more of an embracing kind of a approach.
Yeah, allowing, being present for, where our consciousness or awareness encompasses or holds or receives what's there. I think of tolerance as necessary when there's aversion. I really don't like it, but I'm going to hang in there. And so it's kind of maybe a double layer of tightening up. I've tightened up, but I'm so uncomfortable I have to tighten up even more so I don't react unskillfully. So perhaps, it depends. It's a little bit ambiguous how these words are defined. But, a contrasting word that might be interesting is acceptance. So what's the difference between tolerating someone and accepting someone? Certainly there are things we shouldn't accept. I think being able to tolerate things can be a form of personal strength. It's a good quality, I think, to have. But I think it's also useful to look behind the tolerance and why is tolerance necessary? What's going on inside of you that you need to tolerate something? And maybe there's already some contractions, some fear or some aversion or something that is not really necessary for it to be there. It's your movement, it's your reaction.
One of the more interesting experiences I've had doing loving kindness meditation was the point where you come to a difficult person. And I remember one time where in that practice, there was definitely the feeling of loving kindness to the person. There was definitely the feeling of generosity. And what was necessary in that moment was also a very healthy boundary. Mm-hmm. And so you talked about acceptance, you talked about embracing, but I would also say that in many times for it to be skillful, that it also needs to be a very healthy, not necessarily averse, not necessarily aversion, but a good healthy boundary between two people.
Yes, I think so. And I think of it, there's a difference between what we do with our awareness and what we do with our action, what we do with our heart and what we do with our actions. So The mindfulness practice is a practice that where awareness or the heart is able to accept and receive everything without the resistance. But the situation might require our actions to say no. But we don't. The mind doesn't contract. The heart doesn't contract, even though we're able to say no, not now, not this. So I think it's very important to make that distinction, because sometimes in our tradition, when people talk about mindfulness as being acceptance, learning to accept, it's too easy to sound like we're supposed to condone and just go along with whatever's going on. And there's a very important distinction between action and consciousness. Consciousness accepts everything, and that's part of the skill. And if consciousness can accept everything, then there's a lot more wisdom to know how to act. And sometimes the acting has to be ferocious. It's ferocious, no. And then in terms of doing loving kindness for people we don't like, I think it's very helpful to realize you don't have to like someone to love them. It's kind of counterintuitive, perhaps.
And in fact, what's benefits both people is the healthy boundary.
Yeah.
Is that no?
Yeah,
is actually of benefit to both.
I think so.
It's not a question, I just want to share some thought, the observation. It's a little bit technical though. So from what I see, the love, and it doesn't have to be directed towards person or people in general, just this state of expanding love, exists when we are in our alpha.
In our what?
Alpha, brainwaves.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so this is expanding state. The difficulty that I'm dealing with, when I need to be focused, that's the better. Uh-huh. Focus on any business issue or anything. Sharp focus. That's almost contradict to this state of expansion, because focus is, it's narrow, sharp, laser sharp, limiting in a way, right? This is how mind works. It's limited. There is self and there is a destination. So this expansion of love, I cannot figure out how to squeeze it there, how to integrate it. It almost exists in two separate worlds. I'm either completely relaxed, there is no destination, mind is everywhere, and I am love, or I am mind. So I would like to hear, maybe someone has something to say about it.
Oh, sure. I'm off the hook. I don't have a, you know, a definitive answer or response to you for this. I think it's very healthy to be able to go back and forth between the more expansive places and more focused. And not like one is bad necessarily, one is always good, but it's useful to be able to go back and forth. Someone who's excessively expanded doesn't have the ability to narrow down and focus, might not be able to take care of their life that well. Someone who's always narrowed and focused might never be relaxed. And the ability to go back and forth is a very healthy capacity. And so be fluid with that. So it's useful then to look at the ways in which we might be attached to expansive states, the way we might be attached to contractive states. Look at how we hold ourselves in it. The relationship we have to it is very important. And that might be help you, is to look at when you're in a more expansive, what else is going on there? You might be 90% expansive, but 10% contracted or attached to that state. There might be a little bit of fear. There might be a judgment or idea that you can't trust the innate intelligence that operates in a relaxed state. And you feel like you have to kind of figure it out or get actively involved. And one of the beautiful things that I've just, you know, I don't know, I didn't discover it, but when I learned from this practice, is to trust the innate intelligence that it's not me. You know, I'm not the one who's doing it. I just sit back and something comes. And then I evaluate it before, hopefully before I speak. But this kind of... And so you might experiment sometime when you feel very expansive and then you have to do something to see if you can relax and trust some deeper bubbling up of ideas, of thoughts, of motivations, of action that comes out of that field, that broad field. To give you a very simple, maybe it's a trite example. 20 years ago, I used to translate or read Chinese texts, Buddhist texts. And there's all these pages full of Chinese characters. And sometimes I had to find a character that I was looking for in this big page of, you know, hundreds of characters. And I found that if I narrowed my focus and looked down the line searching for the character, I would get kind of tired after a while. It would take a long time. I'd often miss it. But if I kind of set in my mind, oh, I have to find this character, and then I'd relax and look at the whole page, then sometimes the character would jump out at me.
I don't know if this, this helps you, but kind of a funny analogy. I take a dance class, and I struggle. I'm awful compared to most of the people there. And it takes a lot of, obviously, focus to pick up what everyone else is doing very easily. And I struggle a lot, but I find that I'm able to pick it up the best when I soften myself to the fear and the awkwardness. Because if I fight the fear and the awkwardness and the self-consciousness, I have a harder time picking up. But if I just let it all, I be with the fear and the awkwardness and the self-consciousness, and I pick everything up a little better. So.
So maybe last one back there, and all the way in the back.
I'm really struck after listening to the last two times you talk about love and loving kindness that 95% of what I experienced as in the romantic relationships is really a need versus a love. And in general, it seems that at least in the very beginnings of any relationship, when there's an attraction, strong attraction of two people, that it really is need-based versus expansion and giving and compassion. And to me, that really devalues to some degree romantic relationships, and I'm a little bit struggling with how to make these kinds of connections more meaningful in the context of my practice.
It's a great and great question. It's a fair question, and my first response to you is that maybe it's really good for you to struggle with this. Maybe it's a good struggle. I think it's really help. A life that doesn't struggle with these kinds of issues, doesn't look at them deeply and question them and look and try to figure out, is a life which is maybe not so, you know, not very reflective, not looking very deeply at what's really going on. And so I value the point you brought up, and I would encourage you to look more carefully. And not only look more carefully, but also experiment with different ways. And so you might want to experiment a little bit with the relationships you're in and see if there's other ways that you can connect and be involved in a relationship that's less need-based. And what happens if you meet someone without need, but rather meet out of some expression of love rather than a need for love? Take some risk and find out. So your question, of course, deserves a much longer and more thoughtful answer, but in some ways, but maybe I really feel the best answer will come from you if you struggle with it. I don't want to take the struggle away. Okay. So may you all struggle for this week. If you're struggling with love, it's maybe good and interesting. May you be so lucky. Thank you.